Welcome back. I'm Pierre Daly, Managing Editor at AdvisorAnalyst.com, and this is Insight is Capital. We're in the midst of one of the trickiest times in investing history. It's a period of heightened uncertainty, one marked by a great potential for regime change and rapid movements and oscillations in both equity and bond markets. Today's traditional portfolios face unprecedented structural challenges, unknown unknowns, unforeseen risks, and eroded correlations. Investors have grown weary of the bond market, given the large losses they experienced as central banks raised interest rates at their fastest ever pace. They were told for the longest time that bonds were the safest part of their portfolio, and yet they have been among the worst performing. When inflation became the primary market concern in the post-pandemic environment, correlations between stocks and bonds converged. The market now looks like one trade, and as bond price and yield volatility spikes become a primary risk for bond and equity investors, it's a time when investors should be looking at alternative portfolio diversifiers. For this reason, advisors have increasingly turned to shifting parts of their portfolios they manage away from traditional equity and bond assets to gain exposure to structured notes and strategies that do that for them, because of their ability to provide better structured investing outcomes, which address and express these profound investor concerns thoughtfully in portfolios. But the proliferation of choices of these offerings has added yet another layer of complexity for which there is an elegant solution. Joining me to talk about this is Bill Bamber, Chief Executive Officer at BMO Global Asset Management.
This is the Insight is Capital podcast.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast are those of the individual guests and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of AdvisorAnalyst.com or of our guests. This broadcast is meant to be for informational purposes only. Nothing discussed in this broadcast is intended to be considered as advice.
Welcome, Bill.
Yeah, nice to be here.
Honored and delighted to have this chat with you today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, Bill, let's jump in. Before we get to talking, for those of us who aren't familiar with you, tell us a little bit about the arc of your career, how you got into the business, and what you're passionately working on these days in these tumultuous times.
Sure. Well, it is. Thank you for that. And thank you for the kind introduction. I am relatively new to the asset management space after, you know, more than 30 years on the capital market side. Here in Toronto, New York, a couple of years in Johannesburg, South Africa, as that country was emerging from in the post-apartheid years. Much of my career has been in the what are called derivative structuring, structured product arena, originating very new and novel kinds of transactions and products for investors, both from individual investors through to institutional investors, both in North America and globally.
Thanks, Bill. I mean, you have had quite an illustrious career, and that's probably for another episode.
There's been some interesting times, for sure. Yeah,
definitely. Yeah. So, Bill, in the context of my introduction and the context of structured notes, why would you say exposure to structured notes and structured note strategies have become so increasingly useful as a portfolio building block? How do they traditionally work? Where do they fit? Who are they suitable for?
Sure. That's a wonderful question. As many of your listeners already know, structured notes have become very, very popular in all the major markets, particularly following the global financial crisis for a number of reasons. They initially gained a lot of popularity. They've been actually around for a little bit over 30 years now, 30 years certainly in Canada. The first structured note was executed in November of 1994 on the yield side, and on the equity side, the first one was February of 1996. So they've been around for a long time, but following the global financial crisis, we really started to see an increase in investor interest for a number of reasons. following the global financial crisis, a focus on transparency with regard to formulate payout, I think, was very appealing to many. If X happens, I get Y. That was a big appeal. Also, as your listeners will recall, interest rates dropped substantially. We went through a prolonged period of low interest rates. Strategies that allowed for what I'll generally call yield enhancement became very popular. Among those, of course, right, notes that paid enhanced income with a modicum of stability to the downside when equity markets correct. In general, that led to the most popular genre, as well as coupled in Canada to some tax changes that occurred in early 2017, really brought to the forefront yield enhancement strategies in note world, the auto callable being the most popular. And then, of course, we saw in different parts of the market a general increase in income generating strategies such as covered call, ETFs, and the like, of course. So popular that, we have seen a massive increase in the number of notes issued per year. So, in the Canadian market, I would say anywhere, any given year, you've probably seen somewhere between 6,000 and 8,000 new issues created a year by the big six banks that act as issuers in this market. And with the growing proliferation of notes, it can be a bewildering level of choice for advisors. Yeah. And that led us to create, basically replicate what's going on in the structured note market inside a traditional mutual fund vehicle, the Strategic Equity Yield Fund that BMO GAM manages. And we really did that to help the advisor and by extension the end client for those who are active in structured notes, providing really a one-ticket solution that's professionally managed.
Yeah, great ticker, by the way, SEYF.
Safe.
Yeah. I mean, I think the whole point of investing in structured notes in the first place is for the safety that they provide, the structured outcome that is desired. I mean, in the case of the period where we had zero interest rates, such low yielding bond markets for so long, the quest for yield was sort of a thirst that couldn't be quenched properly, on all fronts. I mean, particularly for those who are nearing or at retirement, in retirement, getting that yield was something that was being called into question for quite some time. I recall having a conversation with some folks at PGIM, and the conversation was around whether or not they could get that 4%, for a retiree. And that wasn't too long ago. That conversation was just maybe a little bit over 2 years ago. So things have changed dramatically. And so in that vein, I know you've been in the space for almost as long as the space has existed, but as an organization, in the case of BMO Global Asset Management, when did your activities as a company begin in terms of researching and actively investing in exposure to the wide market and structured notes? And as you said, replicating structured note strategies in a fund is something that you're actually primarily one of the key architects of that strategy today in BMO, right?
Yes, correct. So from the asset management side, the head of wealth here is Dylan Kamanga. And like myself, Dylan has a capital markets background. And it was right around the time that he was making the transition from leading global markets. So think all sales and trading, which of course includes the structured note business, transitioning over to wealth. And we were talking about, developments in the industry and where things were going. And we both had a very strong opinion that what was missing in the marketplace was the option for an investor who Mike Structure Notes has is active in the space, and you know, as you can imagine, if you're active in the space, you're building up, just like you're building up a portfolio of bonds. At some point, your bond portfolio of individual bonds is going to behave very much akin to a bond fund. And, you know, it was quite remarkable, given the space is roughly 30 years old, that there really wasn't that option available to those who had an interest in the space. And so that was really, that crystallized my interest in joining. And so I joined BMO GAM in April of 2022. And we set about working towards creating such vehicles for investors. Of course, the SEYF was the first one to come out in June of 2023. So we're fast approaching our 1 year anniversary. We've received very good investor interest. Lots of questions, as you can imagine, because it is not a it's a bit of a paradigm shift. And but again, I'll go back to my bond fund analogy. When I explain it, it's very similar to, you know, investors buy individual bonds, and of course some buy bond funds. Investors buy structured notes. Now you have an option to buy a structured note fund, and we believe there are a number of advantages, but the same sort of paradigm and rule set applies between say bonds and structured note. I mean, if you are an investor who want the very specific details, aspects, start date, end date, call date, exact coupon level, etc., that a individual holding of a given note gives you, by all means, keep doing that. If you're like I said, if you're very active in the space and you're building up this portfolio of notes over time and whatnot, and you're having to, you know, at any given moment, there's probably 200 odd notes available in Canada alone amongst the six issuers. You're spending probably a lot of time, you know, keeping track of call dates, maturity dates, coupon styles, etc. What's available when? We think the SEYF is actually a great option for that investor or by extension advisor, because basically we're doing all that activity for you.
Right.
Like any fund, like any mutual fund, we're getting subscriptions in. We build up a critical mass, and we then transact with counterparties to basically create a new position. And we're executing about on average twice a week. I think the big advantage for the investor in this is the process. Because we are a fiduciary manager, we must look for best price. By that I mean, let's say, I'll just use an example, we're thinking about taking a position in Canadian banks, basket of Canadian banks, or index on Canadian banks. Present, we have five counterparties, both domestic and global. We will be adding two more counterparties to our repertoire with whom we transact. Make a long story short, basically, let's say we want to execute on Canadian banks, 7 years, total annual, 80% buffer. We go out to each of those counterparties, we solicit the coupon they will pay us on that, and we execute with the counterparty who has the best coupon, the highest coupon. Interestingly enough, what we have typically seen is roughly anywhere from a 10 to 20% variation between the best offer and the lowest offer. So let's say, you know, we go up to five counterparties, you know, let's say three come back at 10%, someone comes back at 9%, someone comes back at 11%. We obviously transact with the person who showed us the 11,
right?
And so in an individual trade, as a percentage of the fund, not necessarily a major material difference. However, you replicate that twice a week over the course of an entire year, and you're going to accrue a lot more value for the investor.
Economies of scale, right? I mean, You have that opportunity as a large institution to make those kinds of negotiations work. It's not the same as when an advisor goes out and buys a note on their own, and they just have to settle for whatever price is being offered, whatever the terms are. This gives you the opportunity when you're in that market to set the terms and the conditions that are acceptable to you, and you do that on a rolling basis. Exactly. Now, the secret sauce of your strategy in this active structured note investing strategy is the auto-callable notes, right? Can you talk about how that works and what the advantage of the auto-callable notes is to you or to the investor in the end?
Sure. I'll basically summarize, really what advisors and investors really tell us or tell the issuers who manufacture the notes, why they like the auto-call notes. First and foremost, I would say it's yield enhancement above anything else. That's when right. The auto-call really became very, very popular. There's a number of reasons. So, and as mentioned, there's a number of ways. We all know very popular ways. One can gain yield enhancement, covered calls, for example, very, very popular. As many of your listeners would know, we're in our ETF business. We have a tremendous franchise with regard to our suite of covered calls. Right. The auto-callable note has been very, very unique in that, generally speaking, because of the what I'll call the amalgamation of optionality, and I don't want to go too deep down the option pricing rabbit hole.
No.
Otherwise, we'll be here all day.
Yeah.
Basically, suffice it to say, the combination of the ability for the issuer to call the note at a date prior to maturity, that's a level of optionality. The fact that you're in effect monetizing the upside of an equity reference asset, Canadian banks, S&P 500, TSX 60, right. Whatever the case may be, that provides, like a covered call, that provides one with optionality. And there's usually enough yield generated from that you can at the same time provide a modicum of buffering to the downside. And the notes, what you see in the marketplace, there's generally two, what I'll call, styles with regard to the downside protection. There's the barrier and the buffer. As the name suggests, the barrier is really at the end. If the market is below the barrier, the investor has a loss from the initial level to wherever the market is. So, for example, if it's an 80% buffer and the market is down 25% at maturity, then you lose the 25%. In the same example, on the geared buffer, that loss would be about 6.25%. So it's the buffer. I'm a big fan of the buffer myself. I know from a secondary market standpoint, as we saw in COVID, in March and April of 2020, for example, the mark to market on notes for secondary prices, those with buffers, had much more robust secondary prices than those with barriers. I mean, everything was down, as we know.
Right.
Those with buffers down less than those with barriers. Everything we've done in the fund is a buffer level between 70% and 80% of the initial level. So because why do we do that? It's because advisors and investors tell us stability of secondary price is very important to them, and focusing on the buffers without giving up too much yield to get that modicum of stability is not a big ask, and they like that.
Right. And Bill, correct me if I'm wrong, but before 2019, these types of actively managed strategies were not available to retail investors. I mean, this was something that was really the available only to ultra high net worth investors or institutional investors.
So on the note side, I mean, notes are generally very, very widely available, and customized notes, of course, very widely available, as well as efficiencies have gained from an operational standpoint for high net worth investors.
Right.
Of course. But on the asset management side, yeah, there was a real bona fide sort of mode of exposure that was lacking in the marketplace across all kinds of structures.
It's the managed exposure that wasn't available.
Exactly.
The offering, the offering of institutional scale to retail investors was not available.
Correct. And then, what we saw in the U.S. marketplace, a number of asset managers sort of starting to dip their toe in things, not necessarily on the auto call, but in the U.S. market, very popular structures that where they didn't have the same tax change, still a tax-friendly environment for investors, accelerators and buffered accelerators, a number of ETF launches there. We have launched accelerators and buffers more recently here in Canada as ETFs. as many of your listeners will know, we have a very popular Canadian bank ETF, ZEB. In October, we launched ZEVA. That's an accelerator ETF, which we can talk about another time. But this is an undeniable trend that what I'll call defined outcome type strategies that are very much exist in what I'll call capital markets world is going to converge with asset management world for the benefit of investors.
Well, it's extremely attractive. I mean, especially when you consider that, markets can gyrate in the same fashion without it being, a pandemic lockdown. I mean, there's a lot of distortions in the market today, and they're hard to put a finger on or put a thumb on and figure out. And I think, especially for advisors and investors alike, it's extremely hard to manage around those events that occur. And so being able to invest in an actively managed structure is a very attractive option because it takes away all that complexity, the complexity of understanding the ebb and flow in the market, option chains, all of that. You've basically taken that into your own hands as an organization and providing the institutional scale and the depth to be able to do that for investors and for advisors on behalf of their clients. I think it's an under-recognized, benefit.
Exactly right. And one of the things that we have done here to try and deliver on that through, what I'll call very investor-friendly vehicles, whether that be a mutual fund, a traditional mutual fund, or an ETF, or an SMA, whatever the case may be, is we have made the investment in the talent, if you will, the investment talent, who really know and understand these structures. The team who manages our SEYF, it is a blend of our ETF PMs who work on a lot of the yield enhancement strategies like covered call management, ETFs, combined with those who have worked on the capital market side, structuring and creating structured notes. So we bring those two worlds together to create interesting products like SEYF.
Yeah. So in the in SEYF, for example, you have a combination of structured equity and structured fixed income strategies working together in the one ticket solution.
Yes, in essence. So this is actually where I think there's another really interesting advantage. I mentioned obviously what I'll call the price discovery advantage of going to multiple counterparties, using the best price every time. Great. The other interesting nuance to it is when one, and it's interesting because when you buy a structured notes and interesting enough, you can imagine, as mentioned, we're trading with large domestic counterparties who are in themselves note issuers, have their own note business, and they like dealing with us because actually it's a little bit easier. The way we run things. So as many of your listeners would know, when you buy the structured note, what is a structured note? I'll take a step back. A structured note is simply the combination between an option position and a deposit. Now, in the Canadian context, that's a bank deposit. When we started out 30 years ago, it was Crown Corporation issuers. EDC was the first issuer, for example, these days. And for a long time now, it's been solely the big Schedule I banks. Basically, you take a bank deposit and an option position, put them together, that can see the structured note. In the fund, we basically do very much the same thing. It's just we leave the bank deposit tied to that note separate and aside. We transact on what I'll call equity leg, which, you know, as mentioned, we go out, we say, hey, show us the coupon for TSX 60, 7 years, callable annually, et cetera, and monthly coupon, and solve for the coupon. Wonderful. At the same time, what we do is we manage a fixed income portfolio that's a diverse array of issuers, as you can imagine, because it is mutual. We have to have a significant amount of issuer diversification to comply with 81.02. And right. So we put those two things together, and that actually makes it quite optimal, because we can manage the fixed income portfolio in such a way to optimize returns for the investors and whatnot. So it's an interesting combination from a portfolio management standpoint. Fundamentally, it's exactly the same as what goes on in a bank when you buy a note from one of the issuers. You know, the investor gives their money to the note issuer. The bank uses that as capital to make loans and the like, run their business, and then they hedge that with their equity derivatives desk internally. Yeah, the main difference here is we're going to multiple desks and choosing desk price.
Now, yield obviously is a component of the objective of investing in this strategy. What kind of yield is the fund able to target?
Sure. Oh, great question. So, we did a lot of analytics before launching the fund. We felt confident through multiple interest rate and volatility cycles that we could deliver 8% over time. That's our target, and we're confident in our target. Now, market conditions can change. You can get higher, you can get lower.
Right.
You know, as you know, almost anything is possible. At present, we are accruing on average at coupon rates much higher than that target yield. We're paying out the monthly coupon based upon the 8%. We're accruing at present much higher. And so we'll see where we're at the end of the year. If we've managed to accrue at a greater amount than what we've been paying out, then that will go to the benefit of the investors. At present, we're north of 11% at the moment. And again, that's, of course, with, you know, a buffer level between 70 and 80% on all of those transactions.
Right.
Yeah.
Excellent. And Bill, in terms of, I mean, it's very important in this market, especially in a market like the one we're in, to stay nimble for many obvious, many reasons, obviously. One is to capitalize on opportunities, but more importantly, it's to mitigate risk. How do you, in your strategy for a strategy like SEYF, how do you go about mitigating risk within your active management of all the different structured assets that you own in the fund? Like, what are some of the key risk mitigating strategies that you use?
Sure. There are several, Pierre. First and foremost, obviously, going back to my point about executing on buffers executing on buffers that, you know, are, how shall we say, material in nature, that is probably the first line of defense more than anything else.
Right.
And I won't belabor that point, but that helps from a pure risk standpoint with regard to correlation to equity markets, of course. Secondly, is the diversification of what we're trading on, what I like to call the reference assets. The fund by definition, is North American equity category. So 80% or higher will be in transacted on reference assets within North America. So by that, I mean large cap equities, i.e. TSX 60 index, S&P 500, Canadian banks, pipelines, insurers, utilities, U.S. Large cap banks, and similar sectors such as energy, maybe a little bit of technology, not very much. Non-North American exposure, we cap at 20%. Everything we've done in non-North American exposure to date has been on Euro Stoxx 50, which is, for many investors, a very familiar broad-based European benchmark. That is so diversification, and what we're really trying to do is stay very much down the middle with regard to what we know and what advisors tell us is of interest to investors, and that is those referenced assets I mentioned. We're not kind of going off and doing things that are overly exotic in nature. So that obviously helps. Our core mission with the fund is really to replicate and deliver a one-ticket solution to activity that we see investors transacting in the structured note market. So, it really doesn't serve any purpose to, go and try and do anything too exotic. It's all about the order call, about the buffer, and all about appropriate diversification across reference assets. The risk rating for the fund is low to medium, and so as those ratings suggest, it's not a very volatile fund. 30-day realized volatility is just slightly north of 3% right now. With the VIX was at 15 this morning when I looked at and compared that. I think if we are able to manage the fund at a 30-day realized volatility level that is, less or less than half of the VIX, I think we're doing a good job.
Well, Bill, in the context of your previous comment about the referenced asset exposure that you have within SEYF, it's very important, for investors, for advisors and investors alike, contemplating, for example, making lateral moves within their portfolio. Like if you already have substantial exposure to key equity markets, you want to be able to move into your structure, into your strategy, almost frictionlessly, right? I mean, the idea, of course, is to cap. If you have tax loss selling or tax gain selling, you want to be able to make the moves laterally into something like SEYF to mitigate or to offset risk in the portfolio, but also to get that yield, to capture the yield from the same referenced assets. That's very important. I mean, if you make it, like you said, if you make it too complicated or you go off in some other direction that nobody's interested in, you're going to have a hard time, making the case. In terms of how SEYF fits into a portfolio, how do you envision SEYF fitting into portfolio? I think you've covered some of the key investment objectives, but where do you see investors shifting assets from, like from the equity sleeve, from the bond sleeve, and in what proportions?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's probably some combination of both, because the structured note in a perfect world is a combination of both equity and fixed income world. So where in our conversations with many advisors, it's probably somewhere between a 10 and a 20% allocation to an overall portfolio. Where we are seeing flows come from late last year, of course, some tax loss selling going on and reinvestment into the fund. Of course, not surprisingly, when a note, for example, is called or matures, we are seeing a lot of advisors direct a certain amount of that role, if you will,
right,
towards our fund. They'll continue executing for clients who really want the individual note. They'll execute some notes. For those who are very much active in the space and just want to simplify their portfolio, have less line item fatigue in the portfolio.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
the SUIF yeah. is a great answer to that because, like I said, taking a step back to the fundamental reason why we created the SUIF, if you're an investor or an advisor, particularly if you're a fee-based advisor and you're looking to minimize transactions that you're having to think about, supervise over time, this is a great one-ticket solution. So when a note comes due, is called away, there's probably some element of investor base who the fund is right for. Certainly, again, if somebody wants a very specific start and end date, it's similar. They'll buy an individual bond, or they'll buy a bond fund. Sometimes both, depending upon the goals of the individual portfolio. Of course, it's the same dynamic, basically, same paradigm.
Yeah, I mean that defined outcome is very attractive. I mean, being able to, from a planning standpoint, it's very attractive to be able to propose a defined outcome and to invest in it as well, obviously. What are some of the milestones and key performance indicators that you've achieved with something like SEYF and your other strategies?
Well, certainly, a key milestone was actually just creating the SEYF, as you can imagine,
right.
What's so novel. So that was first and foremost. It was for us, for BMO GAM, actually, the first what I'll call synthetic based fund that we've actually ever done. So that was a key milestone. So that the operational ability to assemble structured note payoff exposure inside of an 81-102 fund, that was a big milestone. We're well north of $100 million in AUM already.
Fantastic.
And as we have more and more track record, because very fairly, right? This is a relatively new idea compared to what folks are used to. And so they're watching it. They're watching how we make the distributions, and how the NAV performs through different ups and downs in the marketplace, et cetera. And as they watch and learn, we obviously endeavor to answer any questions about how we run the fund, how we intend to run the fund. It's garnering more and more interest. So the next major milestone, of course, would be the 1 year mark, mid
right.
June, 1 year track record, that, of course, for many, in both individual investors and professional investors and other strategies that may look to acquire the fund. That's a major milestone, having that 1 year track record, of course. That'll be mid June. But our focus is we have a call every single morning. A very broad team, portfolio managers, our structurers. I'm on the call usually at least 4 days a week, if not every single day during the week. As is Sarah Petrich, our head of ETFs and structured solutions, it really is a full team effort to make sure, what are our investment choices? How are the valuations performing on what we've invested in already? Does everything make sense, et cetera? So this has a lot of focus on it because we know how important this fund is because it is such an interesting example of a very natural evolution in structured product world. I'm actually kind of surprised actually it took this long to come to fruition, but it is the major generational shift, as it were, into a new mode of accessing these payoffs. So we're very excited about it.
Yeah. I was particularly impressed by the regular updates that you're providing as well to investors through the dashboard at BMO GAM.
Yes, bi-weekly. We put out a commentary explaining, you know, what's driving pricing, what's happening in equity market volatility, rates, how we're allocating, et cetera.
Well, there's nothing like transparency. So Bill, what can investors expect from this in terms of the behavior and attitude of the fund?
The NAV behavior?
In terms of how the fund behaves on a day to day or week to week. I mean, not that anybody's, I don't know to what extent people are watching it on a day to day, or, you know, probably most likely a month to month activity, but how does the fund behave in relative to the market, relative to the markets that are referenced in the fund?
Absolutely. So notwithstanding, obviously, the appeal of the yield, which is why autocallable notes are so attractive, and such an interesting option for investors. The other key aspect that when we discuss the concept with advisors in particular, what would you be looking for? Because advisors, you know, as you well know, they have to go and they have to select a given note from this issuer or that issuer. And when something is called, or let's say they've made a purchase in a note, and then that same investor comes back 2 months later and says, "Oh, I'm going to give you more money. I really like that note that I bought months ago. Can I get more?" And the answer is actually no, because the offering period is closed. The always on aspect of the fund, I think, is a very important aspect and very useful for both advisors and investors, because that's using that same example. Investor bought a note 2 months ago. They come back, more money, they make an investment. They want to replicate what they did 2 months ago. They can do that with the SCYF. I think that's a very, very important attribute. So always on, very important. It is a mutual fund at the end of the day. So that means daily subscriptions at NAV, end of day NAV, daily redemption at end of day NAV. And we manage the portfolio as such to deliver that, so that it is liquid and we can execute on whatever's going on. Now, as markets rise and fall, as we know, yesterday, for example, we had a relatively sizable bump down in equity markets on the inflation numbers. So, it behaved, I would say, you know, our goal is to deliver the performance of, you know, a typical portfolio of autocallable notes. So you're going to basically, in aggregate, you're going to get that kind of behavior and performance. So you're going to, we watch the realized volatility of the fund very, very closely, as mentioned. You know, it was earlier this week, it was actually dipped below 3% annualized volatility. We're just above 3% right now because the VIX went up quite a bit yesterday. From where, you know, it went up from roughly the 13 level to 15. And so, you know, the VIX, obviously a measure of near-term volatility in the S&P 500, it's at 15 today. We're at 3. So what that says is you're moving at a relatively low level relative to equity market volatility. Now, that said, we know you get a major drop, obviously, in equities, you know, from a market-to-market standpoint, just like any notes. Our positions will come down in value. The key is relative to a note portfolio. If you have a portfolio of notes that all have 70 to 80% buffers, you're going to basically have the same experience with our fund. If you have a more assertive or aggressive strategy, 90% barriers, for example, those note positions would be down more, of course, than a move in our fund. We're trying to run the fund in such a way as to deliver the yield enhancement that investors want, with the NAV stability that investors right. like.
Of course. And one other thing, I just to go back to your previous point about always on, there's an additional benefit to always on. I mean, there's obviously is the ongoing accessibility of the solution. Like you don't have to worry about, you know, it's always available, in other words. But the other side of it is that versus buying individual notes, this always on strategy always, it also eliminates the reinvestment risk as well, right? I mean, money.
We do that exercise for you in essence. And
exactly.
This is really, I think, one of the most powerful aspects of the fund. And I can't emphasize enough the fact that when we do have, when a note investor has their note position called away, for example, which is a good thing since the market's gone up, they've gotten a coupon. Okay, wonderful. Now I have to make a new investment choice and they hunt around. We're doing that same thing, but we're doing that right. for them. The investor doesn't have to worry about that. And then getting back to, you know, the price discovery angle, when we do that, we're selecting the best price.
Yeah, so you're doing it with your level of objectivity and scale, and you're doing it
at insight.
Yeah. At the inside, at the price on the inside of the pricing curve, not on the outside. I'm curious, just to sort of cap off our conversation, Bill, what are your plans for the future? Like, what else are you working on in this remarkable space to bring to investors?
It's a great question. Let's just say we have a number of ideas we're working on.
Right.
There's some very, very, not all are necessarily, how should we say, pure structured note derived ideas, but there are. Ideas. Yeah, on the horizon, we have some very interesting things coming up. I'm not allowed to talk about, but.
Yeah, fair enough.
On your podcast and talk about them when we're live.
Well, you know what, Bill? It's just that we haven't had this kind of regime shift in 40 years. So, you know, it's a whole new period. There's entire cohorts of advisors and investors who don't know anything about, you know, who don't know anything about markets where interest rates weren't zero. You know,
we've seen rates drop basically for an entire generation. And now we're in a very, very new situation, and it is a moment of reflection on how to construct what I'll call the new modern portfolio. So, and that's going to that can certainly look and feel like a lot of previous popular portfolio strategies, or it can take on new ideas, whether that be very short dated, liquid high speed transactions, like whether that be a covered call ETF, which obviously we're very active in, differentiated solutions like the SEYF. And then of course, diversification into, non-public, markets, for those, accredited investors and up, who are, as we've seen with our pension funds, diversifying into private markets, whether that be private equity, private credit, private real estate, infrastructure, and the like. And we have a wonderful offering that we've created with Partners Group, one of the global leaders, 20 years of having an evergreen private markets fund that's available to investors now in Canada through several dealers. We've brought that to the fore. It is a one-ticket solution to what I call the four corners of private markets, as I just mentioned, and that's a great risk-return diversifier for those who have the time and the patience and a relatively long horizon.
Right.
Yeah. It's exciting. Bill,
it sure is. Yeah. It's amazing, Bill. Wow, what a fantastic conversation. I feel tremendous, I'm greatly honored to have had this much of your time, it's been such a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for your incredibly valuable time and your insight.
Greatly appreciated. Very happy to be here. Happy to answer all questions. Happy to come back and do any kind of follow up.
Love to do that. Thank you, Bill.
Great. Thank you, Pierre.
Audio is a disclaimer. The contents of this podcast should not be considered as advice. It is intended for informational purposes only. Estimated 8% annualized distribution yield. The target distribution yield was calculated by using the most recent regular distribution or expected distribution, which may be based on income, dividends, return of capital, and option premiums as applicable, and excluding additional year-end distributions and special reinvested distributions. Annualized for frequency divided by current net asset value NAV. Distribution yield is not an indicator of overall performance and will change based on market conditions, NAV fluctuations, and is not guaranteed. Distribution yields are calculated by using the most recent regular distribution or expected distribution, which may be based on income, dividends, return of capital, and option premiums as applicable. And excluding additional year-end distributions and special reinvested distributions annualized for frequency divided by current net asset value NAV. Distributions are not guaranteed, may fluctuate, and are subject to change and/or elimination. Distribution rates may change without notice, up or down, depending on market conditions and NAV fluctuations. The payment of distributions should not be confused with a BMO mutual fund's performance, rate of return, or yield. If distributions paid by a BMO mutual fund are greater than the performance of the investment fund, your original investment will shrink. Distributions paid as a result of capital gains realized by a BMO mutual fund, and income and dividends earned by a BMO mutual fund, are taxable in your hands in the year they are paid. Your adjusted cost base will be reduced by the amount of any returns of capital. If your adjusted cost base goes below zero, you will have to pay capital gains tax on the amount below zero. Distributions, if any, for all series of securities of a BMO mutual fund, other than ETF series, are automatically reinvested in additional securities of the same series of the applicable BMO mutual fund, unless the security holder elects in writing that they prefer to receive cash distributions. For ETF series securities of a BMO mutual fund, distributions, if any, may be paid in cash or reinvested automatically in additional ETF series securities of the applicable BMO mutual fund, and the ETF series securities will be immediately consolidated such that the number of outstanding ETF series securities following the distribution will equal the number of ETF series securities outstanding prior to the distribution. If a security holder is enrolled in a distribution reinvestment plan, distributions, if any, will be automatically reinvested in additional ETF series securities of the applicable BMO mutual fund pursuant to the distribution reinvestment plan. For further information, see the distribution policy for the applicable BMO mutual fund in the simplified prospectus. Commissions, management fees, and expenses, if applicable, may be associated with investments in mutual funds and exchange-traded funds, ETFs. Trailing commissions may be associated with investments in mutual funds. Please read the fund facts, ETF facts, or prospectus of the relevant mutual fund or ETF before investing. Mutual funds and ETFs are not guaranteed. Their values change frequently, and past performance may not be repeated. For a summary of the risks of an investment in BMO mutual funds or BMO ETFs, please see the specific risks set out in the prospectus of the relevant mutual fund or ETF. BMO ETFs trade like stocks, fluctuate in market value, and may trade at a discount to their net asset value, which may increase the risk of loss. Distributions are not guaranteed and are subject to change and/or elimination. BMO mutual funds are offered by BMO Investments Incorporated, a financial services firm and separate entity from Bank of Montreal. BMO ETFs are managed and administered by BMO Asset Management Incorporated, an investment fund manager and portfolio manager and separate legal entity from Bank of Montreal. BMO Global Asset Management is a brand name under which BMO Asset Management Incorporated and BMO Investments Incorporated operate. Registered trademark/trademark of Bank of Montreal, used under license.